President Trump sending cash to farmers. Mike Braun forgets about his loans. That plus Curtis Hill's legal defense fund and more on Indiana Week in Review for the week ending July 27th, 2018.
Ice Miller is proud to support Indiana Week in Review. Ice Miller, with a 100-year tradition of learning what is important to clients and strategizing with them toward a common goal. Today, Ice Miller continues its commitment to help clients build, grow, and protect their interests. More at icemiller.com.
This week, President Trump announced he'll send $12 billion to farmers to offset the impacts of his trade policies.
The money comes after farmers, especially soybean growers, have felt the brunt of retaliatory tariffs placed on agriculture by China and other nations that the Trump administration has penalized with tariffs on imports. The Trump administration says the payments, in some cases direct cash to farmers, send a message to other countries. The money will be accessed using a Depression-era program, allowing the administration to bypass Congress's authorization. That's as some members of Congress criticized the move.
Is this smart economic policy? It's the first question for our Indiana Week in Review panel. Democrat Elise Schrock, Republican Mike O'Brien, John Schwannis, the host of Indiana Lawmakers, and Fort Wayne Journal-Gazette Statehouse reporter Nikki Kelly. I'm Indiana Public Broadcasting Statehouse reporter Brandon Smith. Elise Schrock, is this what's best for Hoosier farmers?
I think what would have been best for farmers in the first place was for this idea to have been vetted a little bit further. It's just typical President Trump trying to throw out a policy and then having to clean up his own mess, and it's kind of an absurd way to govern.
Is this, if you've gone as far as you have, as the Trump administration has, on their trade policies at this point, is this pretty much the only card you had left to play to help out farmers?
Yeah, I think the long-term play here could be, and no one really knows, because there hasn't been a long-term strategy for anything really discussed. The long-term strategy here could be, though, it's being speculated that this will force our trade partners to the table to negotiate trade agreements that the president, going back to the campaign, has said the United States has gotten a bad deal. And so the America First agenda is focused on improving these deals, whether it's the Iran deal or now or NAFTA or any of these kind of big agreements. So one strategy, this could be a strategy, and you can't talk about it ahead of time, otherwise it doesn't work. It could be to cause a little bit of pain here to force a renegotiation of some of these bigger trade agreements. That's pure speculation, though.
Yeah. Does that sound
like speculation or pipe dream? Yeah. I think what you can read, you know, the reaction we saw this week and last week from Republicans in the Senate and the House, overwhelmingly antagonistic toward this farm aid that is being distributed. This is from a caucus that has been virtually lockstep with the president and the White House on every other issue. So to see that sort of division growing, I think, speaks volumes. The other thing that one wonders, I mean, politically, I totally understand it's in a lot of the red states, it's the rural states that Donald Trump did very well, and that potentially
You
can't weaken that for people in the midterm elections. However, so I get it from a political standpoint, but there are other industries that are starting to feel the pinch as well, some in manufacturing. Newspapers have seen newsprint prices go up. I mean, some are scaling back, which there are a lot of ripples to this stone in the pond when you talk about trade tariffs. So at what point, I guess the rhetorical question is, do you start giving bailouts to every industry across the spectrum?
Well, I'm gonna make it a little less rhetorical. How much has President Trump put himself into a position now where other industries are going to start saying, where's my $12 billion?
Oh, I'm sure we're going to see it soon. I mean, I saw an analysis by Bloomberg that said, you know, automakers they got these quarter one, you know, tax reform savings, and now the tariff or the trade war has already basically wiped that out. And so, I mean, I don't know how many more $12 billion we have sitting around for him to, you know, spend.
Well, we had no billion dollars sitting around because we're massive amounts of debt.
Let me ask this from the political calculation. So obviously we've talked about the idea of trade being an issue, particularly in Indiana's Senate race between Mike Braun and Joe Donnelly. Does this take some of that off the table for, I mean, the Donnelly camp has obviously used this against Mike Braun, but does the helping out the farmers take that off the table now?
Well, I think what Joe Donnelly sees is a short-term solution that probably has to happen, but it's not a long-term strategy, and he said that. What he hasn't said, which is what Mike Braun asked farmers to do, which was to have faith. That's not going to put anything in your pocket right now, and I think I think Braun's going to have to come out a little bit stronger.
If you're Mike Braun, are you breathing a bit of a sigh of relief at this news?
It's strange how this question of tariffs hits different demographics in Indiana. So, and Joe Donnelly is dealing with the same thing. He's got to figure out how to navigate farmers and steelworkers who may emotionally think this is a good idea that China's finally got what they had coming to them after, you know, a decade of dumping cheap steel, right? And that's always been kind of one of the concerns in Northwest Indiana, who are traditionally Democrat voters who Donald Trump peeled, you know, a good chunk of that kind of working class vote away, in part only on this issue, you know, because he campaigned on it.
You know, it's silly to point out inconsistencies in this day and age in politics, but I will observe that during the presidential campaign, Donald Trump was very critical of Barack Obama for doing a lot of things unilaterally through executive order or through provisions and loopholes, as he described them then, that enabled him to circumvent the will of Congress. And if you look at what's happened lately on a lot of fronts, including the bailout, the aid that's going to farmers, that was done through effectively a loophole that precludes oversight and perhaps a rejection by the Congress.
What's that line? Intellectual consistency is the hobgoblin of small
minds. I preface it by saying it's kind of naive and silly.
Especially in politics.
All right. Well, speaking of the Senate race, Republican Senate candidate Mike Braun's fundraising records this week revealed he did loan himself money during the most recent quarter after his campaign seemed to say he didn't. Braun announced last week he'd brought in $2.5 million this past quarter, more than half of it since the May 8th primary. He also said none of it came from loans. But nearly $1 million of it did, meaning Democratic incumbent Senator Joe Donnelly outraised Braun in direct contributions. The Braun camp says its press release said he didn't loan himself money after the May primary, but Braun did that too, about $350,000 worth last month.
Mike O'Brien, last week we talked on this show about the importance for Braun in the fundraising numbers and showing that he had grassroots support with that quarter he just had. How badly does this week undercut that?
I think in different parts of campaigns you just try to demonstrate that you've got a lot of support, whether it's knocking on doors every weekend and talking about those numbers, the number of volunteers you have out in the field, making phone calls, kind of all of that. In the context of these campaign finance reporting periods, every campaign uses these little tricks. The day before the campaign, they need just $5,000 more to get to their goal. And they all, I've yet to see the single candidate that missed their goal, right?
Yeah.
And so you always have these kind of strategies to try to portray, you know, strength and you know, campaigns. Sometimes you see campaigns delay paying bills so their cash on hand is higher. And these are kind of internal, these are almost kind of inside baseball tricks that all campaigns use to demonstrate strength that I think your average voter doesn't really care about.
Do you think the average voter cares that Mike Braun loaned himself a bunch of money?
I think it looks bad. I think it's made this a longer news story than it would have. It looks bad when you say you're not going to self-fund after the primary, and then you do this elaborate tap dance of a press release that they put out saying that they didn't, and then there's something called an FEC report that comes out that says, well, that's not exactly technically true. You're right. This is inside baseball, but voters are especially skeptical right now of people who are trying to go out to D.C. And so there is extra scrutiny for that reason. And if you do something that looks even remotely like you're trying to hoodwink them, I think they do care.
I think last week we also talked about the fact that money was not going to be a problem.
No,
that's true. Race. We just saw the Trump campaign.
So why make this an issue?
Yeah, it seems they got themselves into trouble.
You're not going to have to worry about coming off of television between now and election day, right?
Well,
I mean,
part
just of plenty of money.
Part of the when you dig into the report, part of what we saw too is something that not only Mike Braun is using, what we've seen a lot of candidates, particularly the cycle, starting to use, which is basically using federal election law to double the limit you can take from people. Because what he's doing is he's taking money to pay down debt that it's just debt is his own.
Basically, federal law lets people give double in the general election cycle if some of that is going to repay debt.
Right.
And as the Abby J story pointed out, he's doing that, and he's literally bringing in the money, paying himself back and then loaning it back to the campaign in the same like day or within 24 hours so that his overall numbers don't take a hit.
I mean, it's perfectly allowable under the law, is that just a reflection of the law?
Yeah, probably. I mean, you can't fault someone, I suppose, for taking full advantage of the law. But I do think it certainly doesn't, it's not what you read about in the civic books in high school government class.
I burned those books long ago.
Yeah. But everything that has been said is accurate. It's inside baseball to a certain extent. It doesn't ultimately affect who can stay on TV and who can't. And you're right. It has been a tradition that people game these types of things. However, this seems to take it to an entirely new level. Because when you come out with a statement saying, and I've reread it, you know, it has the words that it was a blockbuster haul and makes reference to the fact that there was no self-funding or loans from the candidate, and then there is. I mean, what's next? If it's just a matter of spend, does the candidate on election night go tell his supporters, you did it, you delivered the victory, and wait for the clerks to certify that that candidate actually lost by 50 percentage points and say, well, I was just putting a positive spin on election night.
That's the one day you can't do that.
Well, not yet.
This one
is a little beyond what I've seen in the past.
Well, supporters of Attorney General Curtis Hill launched a legal defense fund this week as the Republican official faces sexual misconduct allegations. Prominent Republican lawyer James Bopp Jr. and retired Indiana Court of Appeals Judge Linda Chesum say the fund establishes a single source for Hill's legal defense. It gives his supporters a way to donate money, and it makes it clear public funds aren't spent on Hill's defense. Federal law governing the nonprofit means the donations aren't public. Chesum also criticized what she says is an unfair standard that's been placed on Hill regarding sexual harassment. Nikki Kelly, is it okay that these donors aren't public?
Might be legal, but in my view, absolutely not. Obviously, as a journalist, I'm all for public transparency. And the fact is, we have campaign finance laws for a reason, and that's to know who a public official is beholden to, so that we can track whether there are quid pro quos going on. And he's still in office, and his office controls various appeals and lawsuits and professional licensing matters, and right now Hoosiers are in the dark.
Yeah, I mean, it seems like this is the proper move because obviously public funds shouldn't be used for this. And campaign funds, it gets a little tricky because how much is this really a campaign issue? So it seems like in that realm he's doing the right thing, but the fact that these aren't public can't be good. You would think there's
the letter of the law, and then there is what I think Hoosiers and other voters would expect of their people who aspire to public office or who are already in public office, especially if the office you occupy is that of chief law enforcement official of the state. Just because you can get away doing this, don't we owe it, and I speak as if I'm speaking on behalf of elected officials, to go above and beyond and to be to actually practice what is preached about open and honest government? And if there's nothing, I guess the old adage, you know, if there's nothing to hide, why not? He has every right, I presume, to release these. We've seen any number of instances, not analogous exactly to this, but where elected officials have chosen to go above and beyond statute in terms of not only what they release, but in terms of, for instance, the release cycle. You know, sometimes they would say, even though I don't have to release this until, say, after the election under some of the old statutes, I'm going to do it because I believe in honest, good government every day up in, you know, in the month preceding the election.
I want to raise another issue that maybe part of the press conference around this legal defense fund launch brings to light, which was Linda Chesum used the word lynching more than once to describe what's happening to Curtis Hill. And obviously that's a particularly racially challenged word. How much of what's happening to Curtis Hill right now, or happening with Curtis Hill right now, is because he's black?
I honestly haven't thought about it from that that perspective. Look, I think the bottom line in this whole scenario is still that he went to a bar and something happened at 2 in the morning. Maybe the answer is nothing happened, but I don't think that's likely. Because as I kind of framed it last week, what you're really asking your average Hoosier to do is decide what's more plausible. Is it this complicated, from the highest levels of Indiana politics, from both parties, a conspiracy to take out the Attorney General, an office nobody really thinks that much about, or did Curtis Hill go to a bar and maybe something inappropriate happened? Those are your choices as a Hoosier. And the fact that he's black doesn't matter to, certainly doesn't matter to me. I mean, we just need to know what is it that happened. And in the context of the legal defense, he's, we've seen examples. I think probably the most prominent one was Mitch Daniels, and he had Aiming Higher, which was kind of an advocacy arm of the campaign right. that more supported his agenda when mm-hmm. he was governor. And he did disclose those donors. He didn't think that he wasn't required to. He just thought it was important that people understood who was paying the bills to go promote this right. promote this agenda. It's a little bit different, but
I want to ask again: is race playing a factor here?
I think there are a lot of factors, and I think I don't think that's one of them here. I think we need better reporting for women at the State House who are in this environment. This is not an isolated incident. People just don't report. We don't know how to. There's not a clear policy for that. I think what happened with the leadership in the State House on both sides is there wasn't a precedent for this. Nothing had been set out for a way to deal with it, and it kind of spun out of control, and that's regrettable on both sides. We need a clear policy. When it comes to Curtis Hill, he keeps digging in on this. He takes it further and further. He tried to use his own campaign funds to come out with digital ads aimed against these victims. Then he rolls out with the Legal Defense Fund. And, you know, if you're getting to the point where Jim Bopp is coming to save you, you may be on the wrong side of history. It's, you know, he keeps coming out and digging himself into a larger hole on this from a public, from a publicity standpoint. I don't know what his end game is there. There are a lot of factors, and the one that I would love to see change would be help for victims and for women at the State House. That, I mean, that would be my priority.
I think just hinting that this is racially charged, it's just a real easy out. It's the only easy out, really, yeah. for him.
It's a complicated thing.
It's just more complicated than that.
But we can address
it. The situation's easy for me. The situation's not complicated. The situation is he was out drinking, he was at a bar, and something happened that he hasn't answered yet. And he hasn't said anything about yet publicly other than his one controlled statement without answering questions.
And in terms of the leveling of accusations, I would agree. I don't think race has anything to do with it. In fact, the last thing I think that a statewide office holder who has called for his resignation would ever want to do is box himself or herself into a position where it's seen as somehow racially motivated. Yeah. If anything, it would, I think, err on the other side. The only time that it's, or the only place it seems to me where race has been introduced is by defenders saying that this is somehow the reason for this, you know, disparagement or these false charges, as they would see it.
Well, time now for viewer feedback. Each week we pose an unscientific online poll question in conjunction with our Ice Miller email and text alerts. This week's question, should the public know who donates to Curtis Hill's Legal Defense Fund? A, yes, or B, no. Last week's question, do you believe President Trump misspoke when he said Russia didn't interfere in the 2016 election? 25% say yes, he did. 75% say no. If you'd like to take part in the poll, go to wfyi.org/IWIR and look for the poll. Well, Senator Joe Donnelly this week announced he'll sit down with Supreme Court nominee Brett Kavanaugh next month. Republicans, and particularly Senate candidate Mike Braun, had sharply criticized Donnelly for failing to meet quickly with Kavanaugh. That's after Donnelly met with previous nominee Neil Gorsuch relatively soon after his nomination. Donnelly's office told the Evansville Courier and Press earlier this week Kavanaugh hadn't yet scheduled a meeting with him. A few days later, the Democratic senator announced a mid-August sit-down with the judge. Braun claimed victory, declaring Donnelly had, quote, caved to pressure to meet with Kavanaugh. John Schwanis, did Donnelly cave to pressure?
I don't think so. I mean, I would have been surprised, frankly, if he had opted not to meet, because his approach, his strategy, has been to portray himself as an individual who's beholden to no party and is beholden to nobody other than the best interests of his constituents in the state of Indiana. So if he listens to Chuck Schumer, who's called for his caucus, Democratic senators, not to even meet until there's a release of information and documents that he wants. Well, that would suggest to me an abandonment on the part of, if Joe Donnelly were to go along with Chuck Schumer's call for a effectively boycott on these meetings, he would be getting off the Maverick high horse and stepping down on one side or the other. So it seems to me this is consistent with the approach he's taking.
Yeah, is Mike Braun trying to make something out of nothing here?
Sure. And I mean, he's trying to keep the issue in front of, you know, his supporters and his voters. And that's exactly what he should do. But yeah, I mean, Joe Donnelly always said he would meet with them. They were waiting for the scheduling. It's now been set up. But yeah, I mean, I think Mike Braun's doing what he needs to do, but obviously he'll have an easier job getting people to care when we get closer to an actual vote.
Yeah.
Right, and there's a precedent for this, right, with Neil Gorsuch. He met with Neil Gorsuch. He's going to meet with Brett Kavanaugh. He's done this before. He's always been very transparent in the way that he deliberates on these decisions, sometimes draws them out longer than, you know, Democrats would want, to be quite frank. You know, we're always watching as well. But that's part of the Joe Donnelly process that many of us have come to know and appreciate.
Yeah, Donnelly, in a way, is drawing this out. Is that good for him?
This decision has really complicated this election year for Democrats, I think, because it's made it less about a referendum on Donald Trump and more about what you could argue is the reason Donald Trump was elected in the first place, and that's that a lot of particularly conservatives had a hard time kind of transitioning out of that primary. Said, well, they talked themselves into it based on the Supreme Court decision at that time. So, you know, the bottom line with Chuck Schumer and these guys, I mean, we can't even sit down and have a meeting anymore. I mean, like, this shouldn't be a story that a U.S. senator is meeting with a Supreme Court nominee. I mean, that's just what should happen, right? Even if you're not going to vote
for him.
It's
how Hoosiers make decisions, right? And it's the authentic way that Joe Donnelly has always made decisions.
You don't have to be with me, but talk to me about it. Yeah. You know, it's just a reflection of the unfortunate reflection of where we're at.
Well, second congressional district Democratic candidate Mel Hall this week announced he will not support Democratic Congresswoman Nancy Pelosi in leadership. Former healthcare CEO Mel Hall says Congress needs new leadership in both parties, and he says he doesn't support Nancy Pelosi now, nor will he if elected. The Democrat says he wants to be an independent voice in the 2nd District. Hall faces three-term Republican Congresswoman Jackie Walorski in this fall's election. Lee Schrock, Political, reported this week that Nancy Pelosi will be in Indianapolis in the coming weeks as she travels the country fundraising. We also found out the 9th District Democratic congressional candidate, Liz Watson, is also saying the same thing Mel Hall said. She won't support Nancy Pelosi. So is Nancy Pelosi going to get a warm reception from Hoosier Democrats?
I think she'll be fine. I think she's going to come and she'll do her rounds like she does all over the country, and she'll have a warm reception from our base. But when it comes to, you know, Mel Hall's district, Liz Watson's district, they're looking at what their voters are considering in this election, and, you know, polls drive decisions like these, and, you know, they're following where the votes could possibly be.
In a state like Indiana, is it almost, in most districts, I imagine Pete Fisklosky and Andre Carson are probably fine, but right. Do you almost have to say no to Nancy Pelosi?
I think you too. She's one of the most unpopular political figures in the country, and even partly among Democrats. I think it's the bigger issue here is that Democrats haven't really created a better national profile for themselves. I mean, the reason that this election shouldn't really be a toss-up, I mean, not only historically, but just in terms of you know, the amount of Democrats that are running, and the amount of races, the amount of money that's involved in these things. But we still kind of have a toss-up election year for Democrats, and where they should have kind of a clear path.
Yeah.
And I think part of the reason for that is their national spokespeople are still Bernie Sanders and Nancy Pelosi and Chuck Schumer, and these guys are just like rejected by particularly common sense Hoosiers.
Is that a problem for Democrats nationally, that Nancy Pelosi is one who's going around the country fundraising?
I think she has. Republicans have been very successful at portraying her as the devil. I'm guessing if you went up to any number of Hoosiers, regardless of their political affiliation, and said precisely what has Nancy Pelosi done, either good or bad, no one would be able to tell you either way. Just this perception that it's evil. And you look at some of the it's more of a question than anything or an observation, some of the boilerplate ads that you see popping up on behalf of Republicans across the country, where Democratic opponents, challengers or incumbents, have voice support for Nancy Pelosi. The ads always show Nancy Pelosi and Elizabeth Warren in the Senate. Why not Chuck Schumer? who actually
are
would
you
be,
suggesting there might
I'm
be
suggesting there are some,
that there might be
that there
sexism
is a sense,
in politics
that there's a sense that people see women leadership in somehow being more shrill and they're more offensive than their male counterparts.
Yeah.
What else can you conclude? Yeah. If you're looking at the top leadership people, you should have Chuck Schumer there, not
right. And not, very quickly, I mean, does this really come as a surprise that Mel Hall and Liz Watson went this direction?
No, and honestly, it's not going to matter. I think voters care about the economy, health care, immigration. Those are the issues that are going to sway voters.
And the person you're voting for, ultimately.
Yeah.
<That's> so old-fashioned.
Ridiculous. That's Indiana Week in Review for this week. Our panel is Democrat Elise Schrock, Republican Mike O'Brien, John Schwannis of Indiana Lawmakers, and Nikki Kelly of the Fort Wayne Journal-Gazette. If you'd like a podcast of this program, you can find it at wfyi.org/IWIR, or starting Monday, you can stream it or get it on demand from Xfinity and on the new WFYI app. I'm Brandon Smith of Indiana Public Broadcasting. Join us next time, because a lot can happen in an Indiana week.
Ice Miller is proud to support Indiana Week in Review. Ice Miller, with a 100-year tradition of learning what is important to clients and strategizing with them toward a common goal. Today, Ice Miller continues its commitment to help clients build, grow, and protect their interests. More at icemiller.com.